Welcome back, everybody, to the Stark Wars podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars, Marvel, and Last of Us, everything in between. Please take a moment to check the show notes to find our social media, merch, and more. Today, we are recapping The Last of Us episodes 5, Endure and Survive, and episode 6, Kin, in full spoiler details. So if you haven't seen the episode, get out of here. Go watch the episodes. Come back. Then come chat with us over here. And, you know, as you probably are surprised, it's me, Tommy, doing the intro because Michael, I gave him a choice. I said, Michael, you can either podcast with me, Tommy, or you can go off and hang out with Joel. And he chose hanging out with Joel instead of going with Tommy. He is under the weather, and we wish him a speedy recovery to feel better. But I am not alone. I'm on this journey with a friend. Again, we have Jen back again.
Hey, everyone. I'm really happy to be here with Tommy. Disappointed Michael's not here, obviously, but me and Tommy are going to be here to fill all your rambling needs.
Yeah, we lost him. He's our sacrifice for just this episode. Like a classic Last of Us. So you got to lose people along the journey.
Yeah. And it's also the friends we make along the way.
Exactly. We're covering Last of Us episodes 5 and 6. What did you think overall of the episodes, the journey so far, checking in? How are you feeling, Jen?
I'm really liking the season. I like how they're really establishing characters, and it feels like they're creating the stakes just high enough to know, like a little bit of plot armor, but not enough plot armor that you think anyone can die.
Yeah, and I mean, how we see episode 6, it definitely looks that way.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think they're doing a really good job of, like, setting up a lot of seeds for things that, like, obviously you to some degree, me to a lot of degree, know what's coming. So there's certain things that I'm definitely noticing with that lens. And I think after the whole season wraps up, it'd be interesting to do a recap of, like, where we saw foreshadowing happening. Because, yeah, this whole thing is just themes on themes on themes. And, man, episode 5 cleans up the whole Henry and Sam thing. I thought it did a really good job really doing that story justice, as well as kind of making episode 4 a little higher in my eyes. Episode 6 is as people know from the podcast, I am playing along with the episodes, and I love playing that part in the video games. It's just very, visceral seeing Tommy again, seeing the stuff over there and the stuff at the university as well. So, anything else before we jump right in?
Yeah, I think episode 6 is probably my favorite episode so far.
Even over the Bill and Frank.
Yeah, I just really liked it. I really like seeing how the society that they built and how everyone's interacting, how they have a council, how they could have sheep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And they're and the hogs, right? Like, once you get bacon.
Yeah, you're really set. Living. You can set up a school. You're 100% good. They even have a fully stocked bar.
Yeah. Oh. That's the thing. I would just stay there. I get it. They have a mission. I don't know. It looked pretty good, guys. I think you should just
Probably the best place you're going to find, like, sturdy walls. There's, like, a decent amount of people.
Yeah. I'd have to think about what my favorite episode is after I feel like I watched all of it. But mm-hmm. 6 is going to be high for me because I think it's, you know, we'll talk about it more. We really get to see Joel break down his walls and, like, fully tell someone, like, hey, I'm not okay in a lot of things right now. And we appreciate people asking for help and you know,
absolutely,
his
yeah,
brother. But yeah, let's dive right in to episode 5, Endure and Survive. Like we said at the top, there will be slight spoilers. You know, we talked about it. We won't go into too much of what happens in the forward past where the show is, but we might talk about some of the comparisons to video games and what has happened so far in the episodes. And so we start with episode 5, kind of a little mini flashback montage of Henry and Sam's experience while we, you know, in episode 4, we followed Joel and Ellie in Kansas City, and now we get to see what Henry and Sam have been up to. I think for me, the most shocking part of this is, like, it was only 10 days ago that Kathleen overthrew Bedrock. Only 10
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I know. I was like, what the, how is this such a short time period?
Yeah, in a way, it made some things make more sense. Why they were like still hunting down Henry and Sam is like it's still pretty fresh. It's only 10 days ago, but yeah, like they seem to have a lot of things going for them for only it being 10 days.
And also, I feel like the actress who played Catherine kind of doesn't feel like someone who could stay in charge necessarily for a long time. Like, there's just something about her that doesn't seem commanding enough, I think.
Yeah, and that's definitely, like, something that's talked about. I know the actress has talked about because she got a lot of criticism about that. And she, like, one of the things I liked about this character and the way I try to portray it is that sometimes maybe we should listen to the person with the voice that may not look the most leadership but may have a lot of good ideas. And, like, we see it in the episode with Perry where Perry says to her, like, yeah, your brother was great and had all the abilities of what a leader we wanted. But you did it. You did make it happen. But I agree with you. I think there's bits of her character where she fascinates me in a weird way because she comes off. You would not think she would be this person that kills the doctor in episode 4.
It's true. Yeah, I will say she's very different than her Yellow Jackets character, but yet kind of similar. So I give props to the actress for kind of being able to diversify while still keeping parts of herself within it.
Yeah, I just realized, I didn't watch Yellowjackets, but I've been recognizing the voice. One of my favorite shows, which I think we've discussed probably at some point, Over the Garden Wall. She voices one of the characters in it, Beatrice, which once I recognize that, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the voice.
That's on my list to watch. I've only heard good things about it.
Jen, yeah, it's a great fall show, but it's a great everytime show.
I have to watch it pretty soon here.
Yeah, so we get these flashbacks. We see a little bit of Henry and Sam's dynamic. We see that the doctor was officially helping them. And we get to see, like, first of all, with Sam, he's deaf.
Yeah, I love the ASL rep.
Yeah, the representation in the show has been really outstanding so far. And again, with this and listening to the creators talk about it, I really appreciate what they're trying to do of, like, they're like, Ellie and Joel have their way of communication. We see it throughout the episodes of, like, they can talk without even, they know what each other are doing without even talking. And having Henry and Sam have this different style of communication and specifically, like, how much care Henry puts into Sam, puts into making sure things are explained to him and was outstanding. And making Sam younger than he is in the game. In the game, he's a little bit, in the game, he's not deaf and he's not, he's more around Ellie's age. I don't mind the change. I don't mind him being younger because I think it gives Ellie an opportunity to kind of be teaching
big sister.
What did you think so far about with this?
I really liked it because, yeah, as you said, they had a great way of communication and I like the rep. Seeing ASL is always kind of cool, and it's a lot of times overlooked in these kind of shows, having people with, like, visually impaired or hearing impaired, I think that's the correct terminology now. So seeing that and how Sam has to live his day-to-day life is a really interesting twist on what you see. Because, like, you initially you think, how is he going to be able to hear everything? But then they showed how well he's adapted and how much his brothers helped him.
Yeah, and again, we can't talk enough about, like, it should be shown more. My sister-in-law is hearing impaired, and, like, she's a big advocate for, like, you know, even, like, the Super Bowl recently. They showed it after the fact on Twitter. I see how great the translator was and stuff, but it's like you didn't show that in the actual broadcast.
Yeah.
It would be nice to show, but, you know, at least we got The Last of Us here.
It's true, yeah.
But yeah, we see Henry and Sam. He also has his little, man, that made me go back. The little, do you remember those little doodle pads where you could write on it and make it disappear?
I loved those as a kid. They were just so much fun. So I was really happy to see it back.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of like other toys that would work in that way. Maybe like a light bright. You could use a light bright and write in little sayings.
What's the one where you spin the dial and it makes a design, then you shake it?
I know. Oh, okay. Yes. Etch and sketch.
Etch and sketch. That would be a good one too.
What's funny is like when I think of Etch and Sketch, all I think is Toy Story and then trying to get to Al's barn in the second movie.
I remember that now. I recently rewatched all those. So,
but that all being said, yes, we get Henry and Sam, and then it goes to where we left off in episode 4 of Henry, Ellie, Joel, Sam. They're being confronted, and they decide to team up. They're better together than they would be separate to get out of Kansas City.
Which makes sense. I mean, why would you want to stay with Catherine and those people?
Yeah, I mean, like,
especially if she has a death wish against you.
Well, and like, I don't know, this might be a little too dark. More people is more targets just in case you do get caught. I know that's like maybe frowned upon, but I was just saying, it's like that's probably where Henry's thinking of like, I can
quite
use
likely,
Joel.
Yeah, I can trip him.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, like, they're definitely in the video game. Sam is, or Henry is a little more con artist-y. Not too much, but it's like there's definitely a point in the game where he does something that's like, hey, I gotta protect myself kind of attitude.
Yeah.
I think the show is making him a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more like, I'm a bad guy because I did bad things, not trying to justify his behavior, which I think is interesting. I think all the subplot with Henry feels, and I think this is not a criticism of the show, but just something I'm noticing, is like almost every character is just Joel and Ellie in a different version and showing us different versions of what Joel and Ellie could be or what they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's interesting seeing how they're doing it with each one. But I did like, I don't know, I still liked this story just because it was nice to see Ellie with another kid.
Yes.
And it showed a softer side to her.
Yeah, I love the softer side of Ellie. We see this is basically like the them chilling, hanging out. We see the explanation of like what exactly went down, which is Kathleen's brother, who was kind of leading the rebellion before Kathleen took over, got sold out by Henry because of he needed medicine for Sam, who had leukemia. And it's like, I get Kathleen's point, but also like, I don't know. Like, and we'll get into it. Her like confrontation at the end is so hypocritical. Like everything she's saying Henry's doing, she did too.
But she can't see that.
Yes. And that's the whole point. And does one saving one life justify, I think that's a big thing coming out of this episode, is like, does one life justify damning the rest of the lives?
All right. I think personally, no, but I feel like in that scenario, you might think it depends on who it is for you.
It depends. Cause it's like, look, when I'm looking at Sam, I'd give that kid anything. He has a little, they paint a little mask on his eyes. It's so
cute. And I loved the excitement with the comic books, call back to the game with that little collectible.
Yeah, there's so many little references throughout all the whole series, but I was waiting for the comic books to come up. Big thing for Ellie is collecting the comic books throughout the video games, and this is where we get the line, like the line of the episode, like endure and survive, the classic catchphrase that definitely makes not that much sense and has now a different meaning for me because of a certain Survivor player, but yeah, maybe Ellie should get some tattoos, Endure and Survive on her wrist.
It'll be soon. I can see her being like the stick and poke girl.
Oh, yes. Ellie would, yes, there's definitely like a, you know, at some point on this journey, I think Ellie would definitely get into like a stick and poke and be like practicing on Joel while he sleeps, taking his
on the right side. He can't hear you.
Yeah. I think I could see Ellie, like if like we were in the real world, I could see her as like a tattoo artist.
I could see it. Yeah, full sleeve. She's definitely got the tight.
Yep. And so they decide to team up. They're going to go. Henry says that, you know, the rumor that Fedra gave out was that the tunnels are infected. You do not want to go in there. But I know that they cleared that out 3 years ago. But what was it? It was like a couple of years ago, but like it's probably still clean.
And then they go down there, it's a full daycare.
Yes, which I love. So this is a video game reference. In the tunnels, there is this huge. So the games, for those who haven't played, even though I assume some have, or at least some taste of it, the game loves to add lore for random people through these artifacts that you can find throughout the games. And it tells like a whole story a lot of the time. So one of these stories is about these people that lived basically recluse down in this tunnel, and they were taking care of children. And like we get a little homage to that of there's a drawing at some point they show, which is of like two people with guns. And this is straight video game of like, and people are glad they put it in there because it's a whole plot with these two characters, Ish and Danny, who basically found these kids and these parents of the kids and protected them. And we're like, they're protectors, but someone didn't follow the rules. There was like rules that were like, shut the door if you're the last one, do all these things. And someone didn't follow it. And tragically, infected did get in. There's a lot more to the story. But I love that they paid a little bit to that. And they showed that. We get the moment of Henry and Ellie playing soccer with a little goal.
I love that.
It's just showing, I think what they're doing a really good job in these early episodes, but episode 5 is Ellie's innocence. There's still a little bit here, and we're slowly have seen her lose it a little bit. We saw the gun, like her shooting the gun, we saw her shaking from that. I think by the end of episode 5 we lose a good chunk of her innocence through what happens.
100%.
What did you think of this tunnel stuff?
I thought it was interesting. I liked when they were going through and just seeing how they have it all set up. And I'm surprised that more people wouldn't use a tunnel system if their city had it.
I think what I'm learning from Last of Us, the TV show specifically, if you wanted to hide out, you can. You could avoid all infected and all hunters if you want to.
Because, yeah. It seems like there's a lot of them who are just doing that.
Yeah, I mean, we jump in a little bit or all around, but episode 6, there's just a couple that just hang out in the woods and they're fine.
Yeah. Oh, he was really nice. He didn't hurt me. I just let him in, made him soup.
So good. But yeah, love the tunnel scenes. And then I think we have a couple more scenes to talk about with episode 5. Specifically, let's like stop down. What did you, how did you feel about the Kathleen Perry in the bedroom scene?
I think it was a good way to try and humanize her.
Yeah.
Which felt like the whole purpose. It talked about her brother Michael and how it was like their old, or his old room. It wasn't theirs. I think it was just his.
Yeah.
And she liked to come back there.
I don't know whose, I guess it could be just his, but it definitely was like hinted at like, yeah, like this is their safe space. This was their like their home, their security blanket almost.
Yeah, so she comes back there and she needs to feel safe and reconceptualize herself.
Yeah, and I will say, as much as the Kathleen, I think, didn't work for a lot of people, I think for me what it does that the show pushes is the idea that, yes, we're following Joel and Ellie. Great, we love them.
Yeah.
Everyone has a sob story. Everyone has a perspective. Everyone believes what they're doing is the hero's story. And I love that we're kind of getting that with Kathleen. It's like, from another point of view, we would be following Kathleen and we would see how her brother got unrightfully killed and ratted out by a fellow neighbor. And she decided to take a position that is not something she's comfortable with, not something she wanted, and became this leader and led the rebellion and did what her brother always wanted to do, which was take out Fedra. That's a heroic story if you take it in that way. But we see at what cost, I think, is always going to be the question of this. It's like, sure, you all have justifiable reasons, but what's the cost that you're willing to put out there?
I think anytime you take that cost and try to overthrow a rebellion, I feel like you lose a lot of your humanity in order to do that. And you start to become, in a way, what you were fighting against.
Yeah, and I think we see that with Kathleen. Like, we see the scene earlier of, like, her finding out that the guy ratted out the doctor, and she still kills him. She kills all of the rats because they're rats, regardless if they, you know.
And realistically, like, you think you would never do that until you're in that situation.
Yeah. It's very, I think what I love about shows that deal with, like, post-apocalyptic type things is, like, when you take away structure, when you take away society, like, what are our morals? Because, you know, morals and morality is just things being told to us from people before us. So the idea that you can just break away and you're still justified in your thought, it's interesting. I like this scene a lot. I think what surprised me is it was very easy to have Perry be this person that was thinking that Kathleen is crazy and overthrow her, right? But I like that there's almost like an admiration and respect for Perry. There's a love there that doesn't go away.
No, he really seemed to care about her a lot. And you could tell when he was listening to her that he wanted to be there for her kind of no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, we see what happens. Poor Perry. He tried to get her out. She just doesn't follow directions really well.
Well, no, that's why she wanted to be the leader.
Yeah, that's a good point. You should have saw that coming, Perry. She was never going to follow your directions.
No. And then we get to the next scene where they're all, like, kneeling by the cars. And you have the guy with the worst shot imaginable. Like, Joel's not even moving fast.
Which, can I just say, makes me outraged. Because in the game, this sniper guy is one of the best shots I've ever seen. He is so good. So I had to sit there. I died so many times. And Joel gets old man sniper over there who's can barely shoot the thing. And he's just walking up to the door. I'm like, what game did I play?
I don't think he could have done, like, worse if he was blindfolded. He might have actually hit something by accident there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I know it's done on purpose. Like, they've talked about Craig and Neil have talked about it, of like, we changed it because we like the idea that Joel, and we see it a little bit in episode 6 actually too, of Joel pleading for people to not put him in a bad position, and this idea that, like, this sniper basically wanted to go down with the ship, and Joel was like, don't do it, don't put me in this position to take you out, and the sniper does. And I do think that's interesting. It shows a lot of Joel's a little child inside. And I really think they're showcasing that more than even the video game did. Of, like, Joel's a hurt child, a hurt adult, but a hurt child who is not dealt with things in the right way. And he just wants it to stop, but he doesn't know any other way. We get, like, Tommy saying that in episode 6 of, like, you know, we did what we had to do, but it might not have been the only thing we, like, there were other ways. We're just not any good at them. This is what we're good at.
And it seemed like Tommy kind of figured out ways to deal with it a little better, or at least compartmentalize it a bit more.
Yeah. And I think it goes from, like, Tommy wants to help. He's always has been. He joined the army. He joins the Fireflies. He tries to help the people on the side of the road on day one of the infection. And Joel's always the one that's your family, your community is the most important thing, your tribe. Yeah. And for him, it's Tommy, it was Sarah, Tess was in there for a little bit. And now at this point, it's just Tommy and Ellie are the only people in his, everyone else is expendable to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good stuff with the sniper scene. We do, sniper does have a walkie-talkie and we hear the voice of Kathleen. She's not gone yet. She comes to confront them. Henry gives up his position. It looks like we're going to lose Henry here, but there's a giant sinkhole of infected.
And we got to see, was it the level 3 infection? So past the clicker, were there the big guys with like kind of a flower-like shape?
Yeah, the bloaters.
Bloaters, that's the word, yeah.
And I can't remember, I honestly can't remember in part 2 because I know you played part 2. Have you seen bloaters before?
Yeah, I've only got to the part where there was like 1 or 2, but okay. I've seen a few. Yeah, I've seen a lot more clickers.
Yes, the clickers are everywhere.
Literally.
But yes. Let me get your thoughts on the bloaters. How did you think they did recreating this?
I think it looked pretty close to what I remember seeing in the video games. So I thought they came out, and since they were so much bigger and like the movement, I thought was very intimidating. So I was like, this would get me because you don't see a lot of them. So I could see a lot of people just freezing.
Yeah, they moved like almost like Abomination, actually, where it's like very like my power is my strength and I know that. Yeah. Where it's like just boom rushing people. I think my only complaint is I wanted more. And I think part of it is because it's probably a lot of work to do this. But in the game, when you first meet a bloater, it's a big deal. Like there's a whole
It's like a mid-level boss almost.
Yes. And I think I would have liked to see that a little bit more. That being said, I thought it was great. We got the iconic death of, you know, poor Perry dies here, but dies in a way straight out of the video game that we saw Joel do many, many times, which is the bloater will grab your face and take the jaw and just rip it straight apart.
Right out of a horror film. Perfect.
Terrifying.
And then I was just like, in Ellie's insane plot armor, she's holding like a little tiny kitchen knife. And somehow Joel has perfect shots at every single one of the infected. And she could pull 2 people out from under her car and get away. I was like, this is ridiculous. But Ellie, it was so funny.
I think at this point, I just assume she's probably got tons of bites all over her body, but she just she's fine.
That's probably the best way to assume, yeah. Because she is immune.
Yeah. I will say off what you're saying of, I did like, again, I mentioned at the beginning, their communication. Like, Joel knew where she wanted to go without communicating and knew which infected to take out to get her there. It was a nice little shuttle of, like, they're becoming a team and a pretty mighty team that can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, every episode I enjoy watching them more and more because they just get a little deeper with each other and they're more in sync. And he's starting to soften a bit too to her jokes.
Joel already is her dad, even if he doesn't know he's her dad yet.
Yeah, and you can tell he's like, oh, I don't want to let her know how funny I find these things.
Which I feel like that's smart. You can't let your kid finally figure out what's funny. The minute they know that they make you laugh, they're going to try it all the time.
Yeah. it's honestly one of my favorite dynamics I've seen on a show.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked a lot about it. Bella and Pedro are just so good in these roles. Like, they add just enough that's different. Like, to me, there's 4 performances. Ashley Johnson, her performance, Ellie, different. Troy's performance as Joel, different, and Pedro and Bella, but they all are Joel and Ellie, but just such different versions. And I do like that a ton, is what they're doing with the material.
And you can't have something exactly like a book or a video game. You have to adapt it to the medium that it's going to be on. So I don't mind when things make changes to the source material for it to adapt to the new medium better. People get all hung off on it's not like the book or whatever, but sometimes these changes need to happen.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing I will say about The Last of Us. I feel like most people are like, the changes are good.
They are good because most of them are just developing characters and storylines, but you still have the heart of the video game.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is Craig Mason, who we talk about a bit. You know, I obviously love their podcast, which if you haven't listened to, you should listen to their official podcast and learn a whole ton from them. But Craig talked about on there of like, he comes from D&D, which I, you know, I am. And it makes total sense. D&D is such a character-based storytelling. Like, you have to know your character front, back, sideways, their favorite foods, everything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter to how you play them, but it helps you build the character. And knowing that he comes from that makes sense in seeing these characters and what he's done with what Neil already laid down for him.
And you also have to be good at knowing this setting really well too, because usually if you're especially the dungeon master, you have to know everything about the world.
Yes, if you find a fun map that has a torch in it, you better believe that your players are going to pick up that torch. So you have to be very specific about every detail that you put into a setting.
Or if they don't grab it, you need to have that contingency too.
You got to have plan A, B, Z. Yeah, like if they don't go to your puzzle and don't figure out in the first 2 minutes, you better figure out another way of them getting out of that room.
Yeah,
so it makes total sense. And so, yeah, I think we get Kathleen doesn't run away like Perry tells her to.
Mm-hmm. She has to have her final confrontation.
Yeah, classic Kathleen. And man, we talked about it in the beginning. This is just such a hypocritical, condescending theory. But she actually does it so well because she's so blunt about it. The line that gets me is when she's like, children die every day, Henry.
It's like, okay, so?
Yeah.
But she's only family.
She's literally doing all this because her one brother also died. And that's the point, right? Like, it's supposed to be hypocritical. We're supposed to see that people believe that what they do is the right thing.
Yeah. I was surprised by how quick it ended, though.
Yeah.
It felt a little, I don't want to, like, kind of anticlimactic in a way, because it felt like they were building up to kind of a bigger confrontation.
Yeah, and it is interesting. It's like, yes, humans are conflicting, and that seems more important than infected, but at the same time, infected is still around, and it's the infected that takes out Kathleen in this unexpected way. It's almost like I think of Halo a little bit, where it's like Halo, there's almost three parties fighting against each other. There's you as Master Chief, there's the Covet, and then there's the Flood, and they all have, like, no one's working together, yet sometimes the Flood can benefit you, sometimes it benefits your enemies, and I kind of feel like that with this stuff here. But it did feel like Kathleen would be a more looming big bad. I mean, she's kind of just a little mini boss.
Yeah, that was pretty much what it was. It's like your first little dungeon that you beat in Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a little tester, like, oh, this is what happens when people get too stuck in their own ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get all that. Kathleen, rest in peace. She also perishes. I believe it's the same zombie that somehow Ellie didn't get bit on, who had like gymnastic skills getting into this car earlier.
I forgot about that. As this zombie climbed over the seats so easily, it's like a slide, then down, then over again. It was pretty great.
To me, that terrifies me. The aspect that they're bringing of these, they're almost like puppets getting thrown across rooms,
mm-hmm.
is more terrifying than I think anything of these infected. That they're just like, they're not even moving normal. They're just getting flung everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like, in a way, they are definitely more scary than the show. And somehow it just brings up more emotions than the games too, if possible.
Do you think, I want to see if the mushrooms fully win. Do they start to have a society of their own? Is there like people driving? Like, you can learn how to operate your human being that you are now host of?
I wonder if the fungus communicates with each other. Because isn't the largest living organism technically like a certain fungus in a cave?
So I think they must communicate. Like we saw earlier with Tess, that they have that network of connection roots and whatever, which we haven't seen again, which I would like to see one or two more times. If you made it such a big deal in the second episode, and then we haven't really touched on it since.
No, so that's what I'm thinking. There must be some kind of network for the fungi to communicate with each other somehow, maybe.
I hope. But we continue on as we get to the end of the episode. Man, this was pretty sad.
Oh, it was like, this is supposed to be a scary zombie show and I'm crying again.
There's like 90% not zombies. Like that's
I know. I just find it funny how that's like how it's sold. It's like every episode, it's like, okay, where's my tissues?
I know. That's just always like, is there anything good that happens in The Last of Us world? It's kind of like, no. I mean, that's kind of the point.
No, post-apocalyptic worlds are always just super depressing.
Yeah. So Sam, unfortunately, did get bit. Mm-hmm. What I do find interesting is they changed this from the game. And this little, you don't want to know this little thing. I mean, you know Sam dies. But Sam doesn't tell Ellie that he's infected in the video game. This is the part where I think for the first time, I like the video game better. I don't hate what the TV show did, but because I think they're trying to push. It was more important for them to get across that Ellie is starting to question if she actually can save people. You know, she thinks her blood can save him. She tries to use it and it doesn't work. I think that's an interesting take. And I think that's more important to follow for where they're going in this specific show. For me, the video game, how they handled it, that made me feel some type of ways. She gives the worst answers. And we get, you know, it's pretty much the same. She gives similar answers. But Sam is basically asking all these questions of, like, are there still life inside the infected? And then there's, which we got in the show, but there's another question where it was, like, basically about, like, heaven. And Ellie basically tells him, like, I don't really believe. Like, I'd like to, but I don't believe. And to me, that combination of, like, you took away hope from him twice. You said everything wrong to this kid. You don't know what he's going through, which I think is very relatable to life. There are sometimes I've said things and something has happened where I cannot, like, I didn't realize that person was in a point in their life. They were going through something that my answer ended up affecting them in a way that I never would have seen.
Yeah. Everyone's done that many times.
Yeah. So to me, I really like that in the video game that Ellie messes up and she always holds on to this. Throughout the games, she talks about this. It's like she holds on to she has a toy robot that she gave to Sam and she holds on to it for the rest of the time and says, if I could go back, I would have said, if I knew, I would have said something completely different. And it's this loss of innocence completely for her of you messed up and you now have to live with this for the rest of your life of like you, not that she really, he was going to die anyways, but she just didn't comfort him. And I think to me, it's interesting the show decided to comfort, gave him that comfort.
Yeah. I wonder why they did that too. Cause in the show, it makes sense too, that she would do that because she is very young. And a lot of times when you're that age, you sometimes don't see other people the same way you do as you get older. So I think for her to say that makes a lot more sense for her age.
Yeah, and that's where, and I wonder if because he was younger, they didn't want, it's harder to do some of that stuff than the character was in the video game and all that stuff. But yeah, for me, that was one thing that I held on to of like, man, I like that it's kind of this like dark, cynical thing. But I don't, even this is still in another way, she's still holding on to the fact that she gave him, she said she was going to stay up with him all night. She didn't. And she definitely is feeling sorry. You know, she wrote the little note. We see them bury Sam and Henry. Because after Sam turns, Henry makes the choice to kill Sam.
And himself.
And both these actors did incredible jobs. I guess the actor that plays Sam, this was his first like anything, and I think he did such a great job.
Was it? Oh, he was. I thought he did really good too at the subtle acting with his facial features and the emotions portrayed on his face. I thought he did so good there.
Yep, I 100% agree on that. And I think Henry made an active choice to stop. He thought about it for a second. He goes, stops Joel so he can think for a second, does it, And it's like, but then regrets that he did it. And so there's almost like four, you can watch the scene over and over and over again. And there's like four different beats happening in that scene of different thoughts happening in Henry's head that I think were conveyed so well.
Yeah, he did a really good job in that scene. I think just like the shock too, like even if he kind of knew it was going to happen, I still feel like it was still a little shocking.
Yep. It's almost like he acted without really thinking of the scope of it all. Like there's probably a part of him that's like, I should be the one that takes out my brother. But then there's another part that's like, I took out my brother.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Tragic. And that's where episode 5 ends. Anything else you would like to discuss on episode 5?
I think that was everything I had. I think we covered it all.
Nice. That will take us over to episode 6, which basically starts, they re-show the scene, and you can tell that like this is 3 months later. Mm-hmm. Let's start off there, and we are in winter now. It didn't feel like it was 3 months. Obviously, it doesn't for us, but like I also don't know if the show did really made me convey that they've been on the road for 3 months together, because they still kept a little distant, it felt like to me.
But I mean, her sleeping bag looked brand new.
Yeah, that's the thing. They need to rough that up a little bit. Give a couple twigs in there.
Yeah, and Joel's beard, like, he should have been, like, a full, like, 39 days survivor, man. Not, like, little bit of scruff.
Do you think he shaves it? Like, I don't think he would have a razor. Maybe he takes a knife and he does some haphazardly cutting?
Yeah, but wouldn't it be patchy?
Yeah.
It didn't look patchy or like there wasn't anything with different lengths. Like it looked pretty well done, I thought.
Come on, Last of Us. You got to be more accurate than you are being, okay?
Come on, look at how Andrew Lincoln looked at the end with his beard.
Yeah. But yes, we do get them traveling and we get this campfire scene. I love this scene. I do think it is setting them up. Joel's opening up a little bit more. We get a lot of conversation about Ellie's love of space some more. I love how some of these line reads sound just like the video game Ellie, which is just incredible that she can, like, she's being herself, but they just sound so similar in some of their tones. And the who's your favorite astronaut? Sally fucking Ride.
Every line delivery is just perfection.
And I also love, like, the thing about that is, like, two things. Joel knows her already. Joel knows that Sally would be her favorite astronaut. And I love that. And also the fact that, like, Ellie also isn't questioning that Joel knows that. She doesn't stop down to be like, oh, she's like, yeah, right, it is Sally. Like,
yeah, they really get more and more insane, for sure.
Yep.
And I was like, how cold is it actually? Because they didn't look like they were bundled up that much, but they were in Kansas, right? How cold does Kansas actually get?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. I'm trying to think. Like, I will say anything, you know, once you get a little further, you get into, like, desert territory, and that can get cold at nighttime.
Okay,
I slept in Arizona once outside. We thought it would be fun, and it was not. It got so cold. We were not prepared. I think I had one blanket. It was terrible.
What time of year was that?
September.
Oh, September should be warm.
Not at nighttime. That sun goes down and it's now in the 20s. It was not good.
I believe that. Yeah, that's below freezing.
Yeah. I also think one of the interesting things here that they keep showing throughout this episode specifically, Joel is being very territorial about doing everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to feel like he needs Ellie. He wants to be the protector. He is the protector. Yeah. Which, like, Joel, wake up. Like, you can do this together, right? Like, we don't need this alpha male, like, I protect everyone.
You don't need to know how to hunt in the middle of a situation where, everyone needs to know how to hunt, how to take off the fur of the rabbit and all that.
Yeah. And I think there's a part of Joel trying to keep Ellie's innocence for her. I think he's very protective, obviously, of her. And I think, like, there's also, like, a pride with Joel. Like, he has failed. We talked about this, I think, last time. He fails almost every time he's trying to protect someone so far.
Oh my God. Even in the last episode in the hotel room, he failed. He failed on two counts.
Joel needs a win. We need to get Joel a win here.
Yeah.
But yes, we continue. They continue journeying. We meet at some point here. We meet the couple in the woods. Both incredible actors. I think I've seen the guy Graham before in a couple other things. and this was gold. Like, just the idea that there are these people that, like, they're self-sufficient. They're so far behind. No one thinks to even go that way. They barely run into people. They don't even know that fireflies are a thing, Jen.
They were so confused. And then it's like Joel just walked right in. She's making him soup. And then he's like, why are you making? And then the guy's like, why are you making them soup? And then she's like, oh, he has a girl too.
Yeah. It felt a little out of place to me how trusting they were. That being said, I do think the show needs it because it's been really sad.
But we also don't know how long Joel was with her before the husband got there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Was it like, but it seems like they were having fun, probably telling jokes and stuff.
Yeah. And she might have really liked Ellie because she might not have seen a little girl in a while.
Yeah. And that's like, there are probably reasons that they were friendlier. It's very clear that Joel and them are not trying to start any drama.
Yeah.
But I do think the episode needs the jokes and the laughter here of him being like, you just invited him. And it's like, well, he's a little girl. I just, they got him soup. They're cold.
That's cool. The gut's over there. It was too far.
Yeah, that was a good one too. But we find that if you're going west, you should go east. It is not good in the west. The past the river is dangerous. And we'll see how dangerous it can be. We see a dam, which in the game, this is the whole thing. This is actually where he meets Tommy in the game. The dam is. It's like the whole thing of, like, instead of them already having electricity, they're trying to get the power back on. And so they're there dealing with that and happen to meet up with Joel. They wanted to always do Jackson, but they said based on budget, they just did the dam instead. And so it's nice that we finally got to see Jackson in the show, at least.
It was nice. And I really liked the cinematography in this episode. Like, I loved the view of the Rocky Mountains, the river, perfect snow caps, the trees. Just beautifully shot this episode, I thought.
I love the traveling. Yeah. I think it's going to work really well on a binge because you're going to get these, like, moments of travel. And it's going to feel like a long journey if you watch all this together.
And to think it's all in one spot.
I know. But yes, we head out. They get confronted by some bandits, maybe. Yeah. It's Maria. We see Maria. She's here.
And cute dogs.
And cute dogs. I will say, I got very nervous about this. I thought Ellie was going to be found out right away.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised the dog didn't sniff her out, even if she's not, like, actively sick. I thought these dogs still might find her as a, maybe is carrier, I don't know if it's carrier or immune, like what she'd be exactly, but I thought the dog might sniff her out too.
Yeah. And I think you're supposed to, like, I assume you're supposed to feel that way of, like, there's nothing they can do in this moment. You know, Joel's helpless. Once again, if she's caught, they're done.
Yeah.
And luckily, like, either maybe the dog knows her intent. Maybe it's like, hey, she's giving off good vibes. I don't know how dog, like, smelling works. I don't know how dog language is.
Well, they're usually good at smelling a lot of stuff. Like, they use them to smell drugs, bodies, missing children.
And I assume it works. Like, this is the thing. Like, my question to this of, like, it not working on her is, like, has it worked on other people who are truly infected, maybe? Because they've been trying it, you imagine, for a while. Or are they just bringing in infected people? Because it seems like they just never catch infected if they're using this dog. Because she is, for all intents and purposes, infected. It's not taking. Yeah. But, like, there are, we see the mushrooms, you know, in her skin.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the dog must not be doing a good job.
Yeah, unless the mushroom's dead inside of her. I don't know. But she went green with the sensor and when we in the first episode.
I wonder if maybe the mushrooms could also be like, you know how when people used to get the smallpox vaccine, how they used to get that little bump around the vaccination spot? Maybe that's what she has going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. This dog, I think this dog needs
didn't
to
do a good enough
job
though.
Yeah.
I think they might need to get a new dog. Like, just have this one for a family dog.
Some may say it was a naughty dog. That's the name of the studio. Anyways, Rhea hears the name Joel. And I very early on, I could tell she's heard stories of Joel. Like, you could tell she has an opinion already decided on this man.
Yeah, I got that impression too. And I thought it was kind of interesting how they showed how different all the other kids were from Ellie and how she couldn't really relate to any of them.
Yep. Yeah. We see they have a dinner scene. We see Tommy. And I love in this too, Joel immediately starts yelling. The minute he sees Tommy, he's the one that initiates the whole thing. He's the one that initiates the hug.
Yeah.
And I think Tommy's a little, like, he's obviously happy, but I think Tommy's like, I think there's a hidden subtext, not even that hidden, but Tommy, as much as he's like, we both did these things, and both from what Tommy was saying and even Rhea, easily when Ellie later is like, well, Tommy and Joel both did those things, and Maria easily gives Tommy a break of like, well, Tommy only did it because Joel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, blaming him like he's the bad apple.
I think there's a resentment from Tommy. I think Tommy feels like Joel put him in a position. As much as he's like, I made these choices, I do think Tommy feels like his life could have been different if it wasn't for Joel.
It reminded me a bit of the Stefan and Damon Vampire Diaries dynamic with that resentment towards the one brother for a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that with this dinner scene that's very tense. We find out Tommy and Maria are married.
Good for him. She seems like a good catch.
Yeah, and she does. I mean, she was a lawyer in the past life. Now she's running a whole city.
Yeah, look at her go.
But they're rudely being interrupted at this dinner. How dare this random child. Hey, if you haven't played part two, maybe skip ahead like 5 minutes. You gone yet? All right. That's got to be Dina, right?
I think it is. Yeah, I'm guessing so.
Yeah. So we see in this scene, there's a girl watching Ellie, and Ellie gets very aggressive, tells her to stop watching her and leave. If you played part two, they talk about Dina is a important character. I won't get into the details, but it is an important character, but mentions seeing Ellie the first time, stuffing her face with their food. Seems kind of like what was happening here.
It does. I think you're right. I think that was the setup for their meet. Well,
which I love that they're already thinking of that stuff. They're being very like forward thinking in a lot of this. We also meet another part two character in a little bit. We meet Baby Shimmer, which is
I forgot about Baby Shimmer.
Yeah, we meet Shimmer, who is a horse that is used a lot in the part two. It's kind of their horse, so. Just fun getting those little hints, and that is all the part two talk we will have, but I wanted to mention those because it was very clear when I saw that I got very excited.
I somehow forgot the horse had a name.
I won't say I got to it on my own. I did, like, I was already like teased that there was something going on there, so
okay that makes sense.
But yeah, they have their dinner. We get a little bit of that tension, like Maria is not happy with Joel. And like, as much as like, I think they're excited to see Joel, I think they see him, as I've been saying, like, as could be ruining their good thing.
And I thought it was pretty predictable that she was pregnant.
And maybe this is, I don't remember her being in the game. So I think I didn't see it coming because I think in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, they're just there, blah, 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 blah. And I think because I didn't know, I was like, oh, that's a cool twist.
Yeah, I guess maybe if you're only thinking the game, but I thought just like the beats laid out before that, I was like, oh, of course she is. Like, it's pretty almost as soon as they said they were married, and I was like, yeah.
Oh, 100%. And I think it makes a lot more sense too, why Tommy is hesitant about going. In the game, it's a little bit more. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she was pregnant and I just missed that beat. in the game, it's a little more like, ah, I can't have a family here, but it's like, you don't have kids. And I think it also is a good, it adds this resentment from Joel of like, he's now getting to live the life that Joel wants. You know, Joel was supposed to have the kid, and as Tommy blatantly says to him, like, don't be mad at me because your life ended and I'm still trying to live mine.
Yeah, that's true. And Ellie got to find out about his kid.
Yeah, so yeah, after dinner, we get a little split. We see some Tommy and Joel action. I thought this scene had a lot of good, like, waves and flows and, like, acting. A lot of times you talk about, like, it shouldn't just be screaming. And, like, they did a good job of, like, bonding, then some tension, then some more bonding, and a big, you know, big blow up at the end. With them.
It's nice seeing a man like Joel really open up about his emotions too, because a lot of times it's not done. So it's nice to see him talk about his mental health.
Yeah, and I love that the show is showing that side of Joel. We see like these panic attacks he's been having throughout the episode.
Yeah.
Again, like just showing that he has these weaknesses. It's okay to have weaknesses. We all do.
Yeah.
But Joel doesn't think he can. He can't. He can't show weakness.
No. You just have to figure out how to live with those things that you have.
Yeah. So Tommy and Joel talk. They had their first meeting in the bar, and that went bad. And then at a certain point, they talk later, and it's a little more nicer where Joel opens up and is like, I just think I'm going to kill her. Like, I don't want, like, I can't go through that. I also think there's a part of him trying to, he knows he's bonding with this girl.
Yeah. He really, it's the scene where you hear him admit to himself how much he cares about Ellie.
Yep. And I think he's scared about that. And I think giving Ellie to Tommy it's out of his mind, you know, like I can go back to my life. But we get Maria and Ellie bonding too. I love that they're like, why do we not talk about the fact that, like, in these postmodern worlds, like, women have periods, and giving the cup was a great way. It shows the mom role again. You know, she had it with Tess, and now again with Mia. Like, very quickly, like, Joel's her dad, but like, she, mother figures are important to her as well. And getting that here of like, Mia just knew that, like, hey, you probably need this. I have an idea. You do not have a solution for this.
It's true. Yeah, she's right at that age where it would definitely be starting. So she needed that kind of conversation. And I like just the simple act of her sitting and the hair cutting. So it's so relaxing. And I feel like when you go see your hairdresser, you just have so many conversations with them. So it's kind of a nice callback to that normalcy.
I always say when I go to the haircut place, the hairdresser, it's like my ability to practice my stand-up routines. They just think I'm so funny. Yeah, they think I'm so, I don't know. I know it's an act, but I don't care. They like laugh at all my jokes. I tell these stories and it's so good. It's the best time.
I go see my friends. So we just talk about all the usual stuff that we would talk about. With no interruptions.
No, you gotta become friends with your haircut people. They listen to you and they don't care, so they don't like let it affect their lives. As opposed to when I tell my friends all my drama.
But if your friends cut your hair, they're gonna do a good job because they're your friend, and you get a better deal usually.
Yeah, that's true too. And they're contractually obligated to listen to you. I'm pretty sure it's in all hairdressers.
That's like the first lesson of their schooling.
Yeah. And probably another big thing in this haircutting scene that Maria lets slip is Sarah. Mm-hmm. Ellie finally learns that it's wild to me that Joel didn't. I mean, it's not because it's Joel. It's wild to me that Ellie does not know this before this moment.
I'm not really surprised. Joel's way of dealing with Sarah is just not mentioning her.
Yeah.
Not talking about it.
I also think Ellie knew to a degree. Like, even when she finds out, she's like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I think a part of her knew that there's this parental aspect of Joel, regardless if she knew all the details.
I think she was probably still a little hurt that he never mentioned Sarah to him. Like, that was the impression I got from that scene. Like, not so much surprise, just a little bit of hurt.
Yeah. Because I think, obviously we see later, like, Joel's her person, ride or die. Like, it does not matter if there's better people for her. Joel is the person she wants. She has chosen him. And we see that with Joel's having this conversation and Ellie eavesdropped on it. We get a very tense scene here, Jen. We get a very sad scene between Joel and Ellie.
It was really sad. It was like, because she knew what she needed and wanted. And Joel's trying to be like, no, I'm the shittiest protector. I need to stay.
Yeah, this is tough. This is verbatim. I think two lines are different in this scene from the video game. Instead of him saying don't to her asking about Sarah, he says, you're on mighty thin ice in the video game. And there was one other, the whole end thing of meet at dawn, that was all extra. But otherwise, it's verbatim from the game. And man, can we give them like awards already? The emotion from Bella when she does the shove and is like, everyone leaves me except for fucking you. Like the it's so good.
I hope she gets nominated and wins something because she's doing just all of it. She's just doing so good. And she's not very old either.
Yeah, and it's like her expressing herself like, listen, people come and go in my life, but I don't want you to be one of those people.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to stay and help me through this.
There's times she seems a lot older and wiser beyond her years, and then we get the kid side of Ellie again. So I think they're really good at walking the line there, I think.
But in this moment, Joel's more the kid. Like, she said her piece and she's mean a little, but she also ended with, like, in a weird way, she's telling him, like, I care about you, dude. And his response is, you're right. You're not my daughter. And I'm not your father.
It was unnecessary.
And this is another, again, I played the video game a while ago. I'm playing it now. I don't remember, from my memory, it just cuts to them going to the university after this. There was no transition of him being like, I'll meet you, or I'm going to be gone, and then we're going our separate ways, and then him making the active choice to not, like, he can't physically leave. I loved how the show, I think adding that scene makes a lot more sense. The idea that he was planning on leaving her, he just can't.
Yeah, I think that was the right way to do it, too.
Yeah, it was like, and I love her also, like, no apologies needed. We have reset some stuff. We're back on track. Joel and Ellie back together. Jolly back together again.
I wish they would have just stayed, though, because the whole time, like, she doesn't even really want to go back.
And that's a good point. At times, I don't feel like Ellie wants to save the world. Like, feels like they were, like, I kind of want a scene or two of them talking about that. What it means for her to be this cure and what it could be.
Yeah. She just seems to want to just stay with Joel and just live her life.
Yeah. I think the only thing that could validate it is like Sam. Is like Sam's an example of like, she wants to be able to save people like Sam.
But I want to hear her say it. Like, it's never seemed like something that is what she wants. It seems like she's going through the motions with Joel. It seems like something more he wants for her.
Yeah. But even he doesn't really want it. It just seems like, well, this is what we signed up for. Tess says I have to get you there, so we had to follow that promise I made to Tess.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. They get on the horse and right away. She, like, before he even gets a second to, like, breathe, she's like, all right, good, get on the horse. Let's go.
And they showed them doing some target practice with a no recoil gun again.
Yeah, that was gold. And no recoil. I also love like her being like, oh, of course you would hit. Like the idea that like she's trying and he actually is like, he's you know, your parents somehow have superpowers sometimes. You're like, man, you just seem to always be able to do it.
Yeah, and she's like, the gun is broken. You can't do it.
I also love that too. Like, of course you're gonna blame the equipment first.
Yeah.
She also learns about football. I feel like she picked it up better than even people that literally watch it. Like, my mom watched my high school football, and like, she would like make comments. Like, I remember my brothers were playing one time, and one of them got hit pretty hard, and she came up in the out of the bleachers and was like, he deserves a penalty for being mean.
No!
That's not a penalty, Ma.
And were you and your brother thinking, we don't know her?
Yeah. No, we would have chose Tommy. We would have chose to go with Tommy instead of my mom, Joel. Yeah. No, I thought she picked this up really well. I like it. Again, the bonding. There's like, they're in it. I think this is like, this is final Joel. Like, we've seen the evolution of Joel and Ellie's relationship. Yeah. I think 6 and even like the transition between 6 and 7, I think is going to be like, they're connected, or at least they're starting to realize they are more connected. I think they are unintentionally. And I think even if they can't admit it, like, they're so deep into this at this point.
Yeah, they're feeling exactly what the other needs.
Yep. So we get all that. We get a nice little travel scene. I do have to mention, even though it really didn't bother me, but it's all over Twitter. People saying, bigger than the Starbucks cup, bigger than whatever else happened in Game of Thrones. There was, in one of these scenes on the bridge, there's a wide shot, and you can see the crew in the lower left corner.
Oh, I missed that.
Twitter was a buzz. I have to mention it. My reporter duty is to mention those things. Did not bother me. I don't think they need to go back and edit it. If you do, great. But it doesn't take me out of the show.
I didn't notice it. So.
Yeah, I think Starbucks cup kept me more out of it than.
Noticed that, and I noticed the bottle of water.
Yeah.
Way more.
Yeah. We get to the university. Go Big Horns.
Yeah, go UC.
I mean, so many references to the games in here. I loved getting the monkeys. I love this idea that, like, the monkeys are more free here than they were when humans actually ran the world.
And it's interesting that they aren't infected.
Yeah.
So does it only transfer to certain species?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we've seen, at least in the show, we haven't seen any other species being infected. No. So maybe it is just humans.
That's interesting that it didn't go to monkeys and stuff, because they're fairly similar.
I imagine, I wonder if all humans were gone, then maybe they would evolve again to be able, like, it's like the same thing with, you know, it was originally just ants, but then with global change and all that, they were able to be inside of humans as well.
Okay.
I think they probably could be in monkeys. There's probably some infected monkeys out there.
That's a good point. Yeah. There probably isn't a need for them to evolve yet.
Yeah. They have enough. Listen, there's enough humans to go around.
Yeah. What are we at? Like 8 million in the world or something?
Yeah.
Or no, like 8 billion, I mean.
Yeah. But we do find in this university, we find out that the Firefly aren't here.
Yeah. So who is?
A group. We'll probably learn more about them potentially, or not. You know, we'll get a whole Kathleen backstory probably on them.
Probably. For one episode.
There's a group of hunter scavengers of some sort out there confronting them. I think the big takeaway, Joel's got a baseball bat in his tummy.
Yeah. So we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah. Joel looks like he's dead, or at least not looking great. Ellie takes control and gets them out of there. And we end on a reprisal of a song I believe was in episode 1, the song. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but it's like the lyrics, like, taking a ride with my best friend. I loved the callback to this.
It was a good song, yeah.
And the more I'm hearing about it, I love that it's a cover song by a female, because right now Ellie's in charge. Ellie's in control. This is from her perspective now, not from Joel's perspective. And it's Craig's daughter. So the showrunner had his daughter record the song.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
So that's a cool callback. Yeah.
Nice little touch there. So I'm loving what they're doing. I'm excited to see what happens in episode 7. I kind of think I know where each episode is at this point, with only 3 episodes left. I think I know what each beat is going to be. But I'm still very, very excited.
I'm interested to see, like, I kind of have a good idea, but I'm still interested in seeing how it's going to go and if we're going to get a fun little, like, big boss scene.
Yeah, I mean, they could change it. Listen, they haven't changed too much, but there are definitely places they went. You know, episode 3 is a very clear example of, like, they changed that completely. So who's to say where they'll go? They may throw me off. Anything else on episode 6, Kin, that you have, Jen?
I think we covered everything.
Yeah, it was a solid 2 episodes. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the things I'm tracking is Joel's ability to give up a little bit of that, like, having to do it all. You know, you mentioned, like, the teaching her how to shoot. I think he's starting to bring those walls down, like, teaching her things and letting her be her own person, not just this cargo, like he called her in episode 2. Like, she's not cargo anymore. She's a full-on person.
Yeah, she's his stepdaughter, so to speak, at this point.
Yeah, essentially. So yeah, that takes us to the end of the recap. If you have any recommendations, Jen, the only thing I'll throw out is I started Steven Universe. You would think I would have already watched it, being a huge anime and animation fan. It's very good. I'm really enjoying my journey so far with Steven Universe.
After Over the Garden Wall, or add that to the list.
Yeah, Over the Garden Wall first. Then I'll allow you to
move on to Steven Universe. Yeah. I was thinking for a post-apocalyptic book would be The Road by Cormac McCartney. Is that how you pronounce the last name? But it's a super dark post-apocalyptic. It's very depressing. It's about a father and a son and their survival.
I've heard of The Road. I've not read it, but I think if you want that kind of vibe, I've heard that's where you get it.
Just be prepared for the tissues and just to feel empty for the rest of the day. But it's very well written. And if you like post-apocalyptic, I think it's a must read.
Yeah. Listen, at this point, I just assume everything's going to make me cry. I am such a sap in my older years.
I feel that.
I never used to cry at anything. And almost every episode of every TV show makes me cry at this point.
Do you cry in commercials too?
No, I'm not. I think there might have been one. There was a Super Bowl commercial many years ago that had a dog getting attacked by wolves. It was like a Budweiser commercial.
Oh, that would do it for me.
And that made me pretty sad. But I watched an anime and I watched it with subtitles and it was in Japanese. And I was still crying, just reading the subtitles and reading what they were doing. I was like, what have I become?
No, that's totally fair. The last book I cried in was a Japanese translated book called The Traveling Cat Chronicles.
Aww. See, emotions carry us through.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Jen, this has been so much fun chatting with you. And only you, Michael. Tell us what you got going on if people want to check out anything else you're doing.
You can just follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jen_Hurst. I mainly tweet about reality television. So we have Survivor Australia on right now and The Challenge. So that's mainly what I've been watching. And Instagram is mainly me at local breweries or whatever book I'm reading.
It sounds like it's beer and books. I mean, yeah. And Australian Survivor, I've heard some really good things about. So if you are into Survivor and US hasn't been doing it for you, like it's kind of not been doing it for me recently. I've heard Australian is really good.
And everyone's hot in Australia.
Not in
if
US.
That's a plus. If that's a plus for you.
So. Well, for us over here at Stark Wars, we recently did a Ant-Man recap. You can check that out. We talked all about Ant-Man with our friend Joshua and Michael. And then also I journeyed by myself, making my way over to the Two Dudes Watch Cartoons podcast. I don't think it's out yet, but soon you'll be able to listen to me recapping with Alex Brizard and Evan the Legends of Vox Machina season 2.
That'll be a fun podcast, because if you've watched The Circle, you know Alex is hilarious.
Yes, he's very funny. He calls me out on a couple of things. He calls me out. We talked a little bit about The Last of Us in our coverage, and he calls me out for being a nerd and playing along with the episodes.
He just wishes he was doing that. Let's be
he's,
real.
He's actually just really extremely jealous. It's like I'm Tommy, and I told him I'm Tommy from The Last of Us, and I told him that I'm you know, my wife's having a kid, and he's very jealous now.
That's about right.
Exactly. I got there eventually. Well, I think that's it for us today on The Last of Us. We'll be back to cover 7 and 8. And then we only have 9 left.
Yeah, and oh, I think 9 gosh. Is the full season recap too.
Jeez, gosh, gosh, gosh. And then we'll have Bad Batch coverage as well coming soon. Otherwise, hey, come support us. Rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. 5-star reviews, preferably. Like, honestly, like, that is all I'll accept. I mean, obviously, you can do other reviews. If you really, truly feel it, let us know with the review what we can work on and improve on if you feel that way. And as you're while you're there, please subscribe if you are not already. Subscribe to us. It helps us both. I believe we have a YouTube you can subscribe to, too. You can watch along most times to the podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We got some merch. It's always around. I love the pixelated lightsaber mashup of Thanos and the lightsaber. The Infinity Gauntlet is one of my favorite of the merch. And yeah, we also have a Discord. You can ask about it to us. One of our links at Star Wars Pod. You can join us. We have some fun stuff happening over there. Michael's been doing a lot with questions of the day and other things.
I didn't know there was a Discord.
Jen, you gotta join the Discord. So we got one right here. We got one new follower. Join in her journey discovering the Discord. Yeah. You too could come join us over there. All right. Well, I think that's it for us. Hey, stay safe out there. Don't get hit by any random particles of baseball bats. And
don't consume random mushrooms you aren't sure about.
Don't stare at random girls in the cafeteria or assume you might get yelled at. All those things you should be out there watching for. But that will be it on the journey with us. Bye.